This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz.
Good morning, Wally. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'd like to wish you publicly a happy birthday today, my friend.
Thank you very much.
So you've hit senior citizen
over and over again.
Let's just say you're collecting your pension. Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I wish you very, 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 very many more, as healthy as possible. Also joining us this morning, our good friend, former Washington Capital and Toronto Maple Leaf, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's a great day today.
It certainly is. Not a great day for the Toronto Argonauts. Well, so don't know about today, but yesterday was not a great day for the Toronto Argonauts. Was it just the game got off? They ran it down the field, and then a pick six on the first drive, and everything deteriorated from there. It's not the end result to the season we would have liked, Naz, but we will congratulate the Toronto Argonauts on a fantastic season, 16-2. Chad Kelly's likely to be the most valuable player in the league. But the Montreal Alouettes pulled a Toronto Argonaut yesterday, did they not, Naz?
Yeah, they sure did. They beat him, and I thought the first drive was so impressive, too, until the pick six. And it looked like the Argos were going to kill Montreal, but it didn't happen. Montreal ended up winning.
Yeah.
And this has happened in the past for Argo fans. If you can remember back in the old days, they couldn't win at all.
Well, they didn't get the Argo bounce yesterday.
No. Turnover of the ball nine times.
Nine turnovers. Times. That's a pretty remarkable stat. Lou, I'll turn it over to you. It's one of those days. How else can you explain it? The Montreal Alouettes were prepared to play. They put pressure on the Argos all day long, and it's pretty tough with nine turnovers and two pick sixes and a kickoff return at some of the most crucial times in the game. They're just momentum killers. Whatever little momentum the Argos seem to generate it at certain points in the game, which weren't very many, man, the Owls just stamped it out right away. It was a tough game to watch.
Well, you know what? It's sports. It's just unbelievable that you really can never take anything for granted once we play a game with two teams that are involved. Everything went Montreal's way yesterday, and I bet you during the season, Chad Kelly and Toronto Argonauts couldn't do anything wrong. So it's just, you got to give hats off to the Alouettes for playing as well as they did, and maybe even forcing the mistakes that Chet Kelly did to throw two pick sixes. And again, that's what sports is all about.
Yeah, no question about that. But some of those throws by Chad yesterday, the first one, they march all the way down the field. They're on the 9-10 yard line, and as soon as that ball left his fingers, I said, what are you doing? It just seems so obvious. Like, you don't throw that pass. But I'm not there. I don't have, four 290-pound guys chasing, about to take my head off. So, it's easy to sit at home watching a TV making that criticism. But, man, it just seemed to suck the entire life. Not so much. I mean, they held in for the first half, but they got nothing else going. And the shame of it was, the first time, biggest crowd in Toronto Argonaut for the last, I don't know how many years, it, you know, an excited 26,000 people down at BMO, and you know, and been luck some games this year we've had to struggle to get over 10,000. So we big crowd, and they were ready to really rock and party, and they just you know, got the life sucked out of them like right off the bat. Yes,
you pointed out something on the way down that it was a long time coming for Montreal because they were on a 7-game winning streak and nobody had beaten them.
Yeah, I mean,
and they look very impressive, right?
Yeah.
In doing that, right?
I think it was a shame. You know, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback or a Sunday morning quarterback for that matter, Lou, but I don't know. I hate to say that they didn't seem prepared. I'm sure the coaching staff had them prepared. It's just that the Alouettes got on a roll, and it was, you know, the Argonauts had beaten the Alouettes three times this year rather handily, but it was a long time ago. And it's almost like I got the sense the Argos thought they're looking ahead to the Grey Cup. Is that even possible, Lou?
It definitely is possible. And it's more or less, it's just like everything started right from the beginning, that the pick six early. And then you can just see the quarterback just trying to force things into where things really weren't. And when you start doing that, you start making mistakes and you start pushing the envelope to where, instead of just going back, okay, guys, let's play for the next play. I made a mistake. It's completely behind us. Let's start from scratch again. That never happened. He just kept forcing and forcing plays where they really weren't and trying to make the big play and get back into the game faster than they actually wanted to.
Yeah, and when I said earlier the Montreal Alouettes pulled a Toronto Argonauts, what I was alluding to is, you know, the Argos, how many times in the last 10 years have won the Grey Cup? Two that I can remember, maybe three.
They shouldn't have won, right?
Yeah, those were like last year's, they knocked off the win. They did, you know, knocked off the Winnipeg Jets in the Grey Cup. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Thanks, Ness. They knocked off the Blue Bombers, and the Blue Bombers had basically had a season like the Argonauts had this year. And the Argos last year in the middle of the season, you know, we were, you know, worried they weren't even going to make the playoffs, but they got hot at the right time. And they did that, I think, the year they beat Calgary. Can't remember how many years ago that was. I can remember the Grey Cups from the late 60s and early 70s.
Six years ago, I think.
I mean, yeah. If you ask me the result of the Grey Cup in 1971, I can tell you. But if you ask me the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I can't. But I do remember that game they beat Calgary in the Grey Cup. I do remember last year's game against the Blue Bombers. And, you know, by no means were the Argos an outstanding team during the regular season, the years they won the Grey Cup. And it's like Montreal did to the Argos what the Argos have been doing to other teams in the past.
They hadn't played a meaningful game for 44 days.
And that's got to hurt.
That's got to hurt.
That's, right? Lou, your comments on that.
Excuse me.
You're fighting a cold, Lou.
Yes, I am. My voice is going too, but... you're absolutely right, and you know what it is? It's really tough to get back into the mode sometimes when you're not playing meaningful games. And I know it's easier said than done. They beat them three times this year. But again, it comes down to preparation, and you have to have things go right most of the time. And when things don't go right, you start pressing the envelope, and you start making things happen that aren't really there, instead of taking the so-called the route that he took during the regular season when things were sour, because obviously they didn't have a perfect year, but there must have been times during the year where they went through spans during a game that things didn't go well for them.
Lou, you got to go get a glass of water.
Okay.
get a glass of oil and hang in there, buddy.
A shot of whiskey.
Shot of whiskey.
I'd rather have a shot of whiskey.
Anyways, get yourself a glass of water. We're going to go to break very, very shortly, and hopefully you can recover a bit of your
Wally,
voice.
Can I bring something up?
Absolutely.
I'd like to bring something up about the Blue Jays before we forget. Otani's in on the weekend talking to the Jays about signing here, and I'm wondering if Rogers will make the splash and sign him.
It's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take a lot of money.
They need to do something for the fans, and I think that because of the season they had last year, I think they're going to try to make every effort in signing Ohtani.
Why not? He's the show in Major League Baseball. I guess four or five players at the really high end. I mean, you know, he's a Cy Young Award type pitcher. He's an MVP hitter. He can, you know, it's just like he's a one in a lifetime type of player. So you're going to have to spend a lot of money. But they've spent a lot of money on rentals down at whatever. What do you call this place nowadays? The Rogers?
The Rogers
Center. I just call it the Sky Dome.
It's automatic to call it the Sky Dome because
I call it the Sky Dome.
But it is Rogers.
But, you know, they've spent a lot of money on rentals down there, so you got to fill the seats. Why not? If they can do it, break the bank.
So I'm starting it now. Sign Ohtani, right?
Yeah, I always look at it this way. They're not using my money. So
exactly.
Rogers has got a lot of, mind you, you know, I've been between my cable account, my mobile account, and my internet and everything. I guess it is in some ways a little bit of my money. Uh-huh. So God bless them. If Rogers can do it, we'll give them a big pat on the back. Just to leave the Argos discussion really quickly, then we'll go to break. Then we've got Matt Marchese coming on, Sportsnet's Matt Marchese. We're going to talk about the Buffalo Bills and some NFL football. Later on in the hour, we've got NHL historian and columnist Dave Stubbs. The Hall of Fame induction ceremonies are tomorrow night, and we are going to talk to Dave Stubbs about that. Before we go, Naz and Lou, if you're still there, would you have pulled Chad Kelly out of the game yesterday at any point in time? Not even necessarily for the entire game, just for a couple of series or maybe a series or two. Almost impossible, I think, for a coach to do that to the most valuable player in the league. But, you know, they were still in the game in the first half. The defense was playing exceptional. They were only down, I think, 10-3 at halftime. They certainly weren't out of it. Any point in that time you think maybe, you know what? Let's give him a bit of a break. Let's let him collect. Let's let him look at the game from the sideline. Or is that just you don't touch the best player in the league doing that? Naz and then Lou?
I don't think they could have pulled him in that situation because, yeah, as you said, the best player in the league, and he's been doing it all year, and you got to give him the crack at it. But you know what? Maybe a couple of series would have helped them, but I don't think they should have pulled them.
And I go back to the example back in that game back in, I think it was 93, the Buffalo Bills, when they were down against the Houston Oilers, like 35-3 or whatever it was, 31, I can't remember the score, and they brought Frank Reich in, completely changed the nature of the game. Lou, any thoughts on that?
I wouldn't have brought him in before the halftime. I had a long chat with him at halftime, and then once things were going sour in the third quarter, that's when you start pulling them.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily pull for the whole game, but tough one. Most valuable player in the league. I think we'll leave this session with the following. The Argos had a fantastic season. It's a shame what happened yesterday, but let's not forget the great season they had, and hopefully they carry that into next year, and hopefully we carry some crowds into next year, and you know what? Hope springs eternal. We'll come back next year. We'll get a different result next year. Congrats to the Toronto Argos for a fantastic season. We're going to take it to break. And when we come back from break, we'll have Sportsnet's Matt Marchese. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian, authentically Italian.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. they support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Play ball!
In baseball, winning takes nine. On the ice, you need six working together towards a common goal. Whereas success in sports radio requires a team of two who don't always agree. Venture Construction Services congratulates the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on 10 years of telling it like it is. More than friends of the show, they're fans who want to see Naz and Wally succeed for as long as Venture Construction has. Almost 30 years. Three cheers for the winning team of Naz and Wally.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, live video and streaming on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, Sportsnet's Matt Marchese. Matt, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. You going to publicly acknowledge an important person in your life on the air today, Matt?
Sure. Sure, why not? Why not? Because if it weren't for him, I wouldn't be here. happy birthday to my dad, Naz. 67 years young today. Oh, am I supposed to say that? Am I supposed to say how old you are?
Well, okay? 67 might be lucky, Matt. You know the last time something happened in 1967.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves here, okay? It's only two wins in a row, guys. Let's not plan the parade.
Well, we're sort of lucky we're doing the show this morning rather than a couple of days ago, because if we were to get into our Leaf discussion, it might have been significantly different. But thankfully the Leafs, squeezed out a couple of points on Friday night and another couple of points last night. But we hope they can keep that going over in Sweden at the end of this week. But Matt, you know, you inherited from your dad a passion for another team down in Western New York, the Buffalo Bills. So this isn't to make it to be fair. I think not so sure this is the season we would have expected from the Buffalo Bills. Injury troubles have had a significant effect, but I think it's more than injury troubles. They're going to have to fight for a playoff spot, and we wouldn't have expected that. What's going on down in Western New York, Matt?
Well, first of all, thanks, Dad, for putting me through hell with all of the teams that,
that you inherited
from you. So, yeah.
The Bills are the best, eh?
Yeah. So there's that.
Well, you won a championship with the Raptors, though, so.
Yeah, I know, but it's, like, I like basketball, but it's not the same as my love of football and hockey. And so I get to just wallow away and feel sorry for myself that my dad was a fan of these teams. The issue right now with the Bills is, yes, the injuries. I mean, when you lose Matt Milano, who is not only one of the best linebackers in the NFL, he's one of the best players in the NFL. So when you lose a guy like that in the middle of your defense, the guy who's, you know, the captain of your defense, calls the plays, does all that stuff, that's a huge loss. And then they lose Tre'Davious White, who at one point in time was one of, if not the best cover corners in the NFL, so much so that they didn't want to throw to him. So there's been that. The other thing is that it's funny because we get really down on the offense, but when you break it down, and I know analytics are not everybody's favorite thing, and they're certainly not mine, but when you look at the Bills' offense, they are one of the most efficient offensive teams in the league. Now, you can say that that's buoyed by you know, the play against the Raiders early on and what they did against Miami and Washington. And okay, that's fine. But the problem is that they're not finishing drives with 6 points or 7 points. Like, that's the biggest issue here right now. And what I've found is the offense is just very pedantic. It moves slowly. And, you know, in the Cincinnati game the other night on Sunday, the first drive, they were in and out of the huddle quick. They were really putting Cincinnati on their toes. And they scored on the first drive as if Cincinnati's defense wasn't even there, much like Cincinnati had just scored on them. And so you're thinking, okay, this is going to be a shootout. And then basically until the end of the half, the Bills did not put together a good drive. Well, it's because they moved slowly. And my issue with offensive play caller Ken Dorsey is, if you find something is working, why do you get away from it? You know, they didn't really protect Josh Allen all that much. They didn't run the ball a whole heck of a lot with either James Cook or Latavius Murray. And they're basically play calling for Josh Allen to be Superman. And a lot of the time, Josh Allen is Superman. But there are a lot of times where he's Clark Kent and he's throwing interceptions. So I think that's part of the problem here is that there's too much of a reliance on the quarterback. And I know people are going to say, well, you know, they rely on Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Well, they run the ball a lot in Kansas City as well. And they run the ball a lot in Philadelphia for Jalen Hurts. And so they've given James Cook carries in the past to keep the defense on their toes. And James Cook has always done is averaged, you know, over 4.5 yards a carry throughout the season and even last year. So I think there's a lot going on there. But specifically with the offense, they got to really start moving the ball and moving it efficiently while being in and out of the huddle quickly, keeping the defense on their toes.
Strength of schedule. How much does that mean for the Bills? They had a tough schedule coming in.
Well, there was a time, maybe even as, you know, as early as last year, where I said it didn't matter who they played. But here's the thing. I do think strength of schedule matters for certain teams. For the Bills, I think it's just about putting this together right now. I don't necessarily think that they're going to get their doors blown off by any team. Listen, Cincinnati had over the last 2 weeks against Buffalo, against the Niners, and even before the bye, they were okay. But the last 2 weeks, Cincinnati's been one of the best teams in the NFL, and they're starting to find their groove. The Bills were within 6 points, and one of the drives, Dalton Kincaid fumbled at the 11-yard line, and they could have scored, and they had a chance to drive the ball down the field at the end of the game, and they didn't do it. Like, they are there. It's, you know, I know it's easy to, you know, in hindsight to say, well, if this happened, then this happened. But the Bills are like 5 or 6 plays away from having 1 or 2 losses. Like, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, they're differential second in the league to
and that's what their defense not really playing that great over the last 4 weeks. They've been okay, but they haven't been they've been all right. So I think the strength of schedule, I mean, certainly it does matter because you don't have any layup games. You know, they're going to play the Eagles, they're going to play Miami again. They're going to play the Jets, who have played them tough historically, especially with Josh Allen as the quarterback. Like, there's a lot to unpack there. So I do think it matters, but I think if the Bills offense can get going, because here's the other thing. This is twofold. The Bills offense has not been sustaining drives in the first half. That's been a problem over the last 4 games. So what it does is it tires out your defense. And then the defense is so banged up, they're not creating turnovers and not putting the offense in good spots, and they're not getting off the field. So other teams are sustaining long drives, they're tiring out the defense, and the offense can't get in a rhythm because they're barely on the field. So I think it goes a long way, and that's what happens when you play against good teams. They know they're going to run the ball against the Bills, they're going to try and grind it out, and then they're going to take shots downfield. That's what they're going to do against Buffalo. And if Buffalo can get a couple of timely turnovers, and that's why I'm very interested to see, you know, how they use Rasul Douglas, the guy they acquired, the corner they acquired from Green Bay at the trade deadline. He's a big play guy. So I'm curious to see how they utilize him and if he has a bigger role tomorrow night against the Broncos, because God knows they could use an interception right now and not throwing one for a change.
Lou, you still with us?
I'm still here.
Can you get one out or you want to pack it in for the day? Go ahead.
No, I want to ask
Mr. Marchese there. I have a problem with Sean McDermott doing both roles, being the head coach and also the defensive coordinator. I'm not sure if he's suited for both because he does have a little bit of an eagle to his demeanor. Would it have been better to have a separate guy running the defense? And is Matt Milano that much of a mainstay as a key cog on that Buffalo defense? Because I can't see them, or I haven't seen them come up with a big stop during the season so far.
Yeah, basically when he went down, like it. So it's Matt Milano, it's Trey White, and even defensive tackle Daquan Jones, who was playing out of his mind before he got hurt in that London game. And so Milano is absolutely, for my money, he's one of the best players in the NFL. And that's not my Buffalo Bills fandom, because I have to try and keep that in check because I do host an NFL show. So I have to try and be somewhat subjective. But the other thing is, too, I'm glad you brought up the play calling with McDermott, because it looked good really early on. But what we're starting to see as the season has progressed is, you know, him having to do both roles, having to do the, you know, being the head coach and calling plays on defense, I think it's taken away from his ability to oversee the entire game. Because, you know, there have been some times where they've had some weird timeouts because, you know, and that's not always on Sean McDermott, but weird challenges that didn't make any sense. And then they lose a timeout because it's a bad challenge. And I just feel like it's too much for him to be doing both. But we weren't saying that early in the year when they had Matt Milano, who maybe takes a little bit of that pressure off because, you know, they've got a younger player in Terrell Bernard, who's basically the guy who is relaying the play to the entire defense. And maybe there's communication issues. There's a lot of things there, but I do wonder if we get to a point, maybe it's in the next couple of weeks, where it becomes too much and Sean McDermott is just the head coach and not the defensive play caller. So I think it's something to monitor for sure. But, I mean, like I always say, if anybody loses one of the best players at any position in football, you're going to feel it. So when you lose somebody in the middle of your defense, the guy who's not only great in pass coverage, he's not only great at rushing the quarterback, but he's also really good in stopping the run. I mean, he's that triple threat, right? So that's a big loss. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. Denver's been playing a lot better of late. Certainly beating the Chiefs is something to, you know, a feather to put in your cap. But we'll see what the Bills can come up with, and especially the offense, because that Broncos defense, we laughed about them giving up 70 points to Miami, but they've been a lot better since then. They've really tightened things up.
Matt, certainly the game against the Broncos, I don't see any other way. It's a must win. You can't lose this one and then have to go play some of the teams you have to play the rest of the season and try and squeeze out a playoff spot. They got to win this game. I love the way you've analyzed the Bills. It's probably the best I've heard in a long, long time. Is that they, you know, they're asking way, way too much of Josh Allen. And he's got to play superhuman every game, or otherwise they don't win. And the Clark Kent Superman analogy, I think, is perfect. Thanks for that. What I found disconcerting about the Bills this year is and I don't know if this is as a result of playing inexperienced people in certain situations where you've got a lot of your key people injured, but it's certainly in that Tampa game and the Giants game. Man, penalties, like just mental mistakes at the wrong times. Like that Tampa game, you had these guys out twice and you get penalties on shutdown fourth downs. And, you know, you got to survive, you know, a Hail Mary into the end zone to win the game. I didn't see that with Buffalo Bills teams in the last couple of years, and I'm seeing it way too much this year. What's going on?
You know, I think part of it is there are guys that are, I think it's guys that are playing in spots that they're just not good enough to be playing in. I think that's part of the issue. Some of it is discipline, but the Bills, generally speaking, have been a fairly disciplined team. They're certainly not the best. They're certainly not the worst. They're kind of somewhere in the middle. But I think it is because of the fact that they've got guys that are less talented that are playing in spots. You know, you see guys that are taking defensive holding penalties or guys that are taking pass interference penalties. And some of them are not penalties, and the Bills have been on the opposite end of unfortunate calls. They've also been the beneficiaries of non-calls. You know, the Giants game, there was a pass interference that was called on, I think it was Taron Johnson, and then the next play they threw back to Darren Waller, and Taron Johnson took another penalty, and they didn't call it. Basically, what the last few weeks has reminded me of is the Rex Ryan years, where they were so undisciplined and they took stupid penalties, and the defense would hold and then there'd be a penalty, and then the offense would just be getting close to the end zone but not good enough to score points. Like, it's been very frustrating. But the penalties, you know, it's one thing to give up, you know, a first down on a play where you just get beat. It's another thing to give away free yards. And that's the problem lately, is they've been giving away free yards in key situations. You know, you mentioned the Tampa Bay game. They should have lost that game. They had that game in hand. The game was over, and they somehow managed to almost spit the bid out against the Bucs. You know, Chris Godwin, you can even make a case that there was pass interference on that play. He turned and just missed the ball. The Giants game was way too close for comfort. And then you talk about losing to the Bengals, and you talk about losing to the Patriots. Of all teams, the Patriots, who have been horrible all season. So it's funny, because for me, it feels like a very scary time to be a Bills fan, because it feels like the window's closing. But I should just look back and say, it's not all bad. They didn't get into the playoffs for 20 years. So it won't be that bad. But it does feel like they're going to have to scratch and claw for a playoff spot here. And that's certainly not something that we would have said before all these injuries, because, you know, they went and demolished the Miami Dolphins. They absolutely manhandled one of the best offenses in football as if they didn't exist. So it's funny how, you know, a couple of injuries totally changes the fortune of your team. They're going to have to play with that next man up mentality, or else they're not going to get into the playoffs. Because there's too many teams that are right around the same record in the AFC right now.
Are the Ravens for real, Matt?
Oh, they're for real. They're legit good. Lamar Jackson's playing at an MVP level. That defense, outside of, and that's why today's game against Cleveland is going to be very interesting, because outside of Cleveland, they've been the best defense. And you can even make the case, because they've had a little bit of a tougher schedule than Cleveland, that they are the better team. Defensively, anyway. They've got offensive coordinator Todd Monken has been a wonderful addition to that team. They've made Lamar Jackson, you know, they gave him weapons. They drafted Zay Flowers. And, you know, for whatever we think of Odell Beckham Jr., he's certainly been better of late. But they brought him in. You know, Mark Andrews is playing at a high level. And they're doing this all without that elite running back. Like, J.K. Dobbins got hurt early in the year, tore his Achilles, and got hurt, you know, season-ending injury once again for him. And they've just been relying on Gus Edwards, who's, you know, we like to call him a jag. He's just a guy. But you know what? He's doing a great job with that offensive line blocking for him, scoring touchdowns like crazy. They've got another young kid, running back Keaton Mitchell, undrafted, who looked fantastic. I think he had 9 carries for 136 yards last week. So the Ravens, because they can beat you in multiple ways, which is something that we did not say about the Ravens before. You know, Lamar Jackson's completing, I think, 71% of his passes, the highest completion rate in the NFL, just ahead of Josh Allen. And they are pushing the ball downfield like they haven't done before with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. Again, because they can. So that's what scares me about them. And their defense is playing at an incredibly elite clip right now. For my money, they're the best team in the AFC. Like, I know people want to jump on the Cincy bandwagon now. I know people want to talk about the Chiefs because, hey, the offense isn't very good, but, hey, their defense is really good. I still think, like, I would put the Ravens up there with the Eagles as, you know, 1A, 1B best teams in the NFL right now.
We've been chatting with Matt Marchese, Sportsnet's Matt Marchese. Matt, this is the best NFL Bills talk we've had all year. You've broken it all down for us. You've done a fantastic job for us. I can't leave it without letting our listeners, please tell our listeners where they can, you've got your own show on Sportsnet where you're talking NFL football. I'd love for you to promo that a little bit. It's a great show. You've obviously got a top-notch knowledge of the NFL. Where can our listeners listen to you?
You can listen to Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on 11 a.m. Eastern. You can download the podcast. The show is called The Fan Checkdown. It's myself and my co-host, Donovan Bennett. And we like to break it down. And as long as we break it down and the Bills don't break my heart, we'll all be okay.
Well, I'm not so sure about the last one. Fortunately, I've had the opportunity once in my lifetime for the Bills to win a championship. But that was in the old AFL. Well, I'd love to see that. Matt, I can't thank you enough. I highly encourage our listeners to tune into your show. Keep up the fantastic work. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Matt Marchese. We're going to take it to break. When we come back from break, we're going to be talking some NHL Hall of Fame. It's not the NHL Hall of Fame. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame. And they have the induction ceremonies tomorrow night at the Hockey Hall of Fame. And who better than talk to than NHL columnist and great NHL historian Dave Stubbs. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
Play ball!
In baseball, winning takes nine. On the ice, you need six working together towards a common goal. Whereas success in sports radio requires a team of two who don't always agree. Venture Construction Services congratulates the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on 10 years of telling it like it is. More than friends of the show, they're fans who want to see Naz and Wally succeed for as long as Venture Construction has. Almost 30 years. Three cheers for the winning team of Naz and Wally.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigamond. We are live on AM 740, 96.7 FM in downtown Toronto and live video and audio streaming at zoomerradio.ca. We're trying to get a hold of Dave Stubbs. We should have him shortly. We will keep trying. We have a Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremonies going on tomorrow night, Naz, and this year's class, it's the goalie class.
Three goalies.
Barrasso, Vernon, Lundqvist. What do you think?
Oh, well deserved, but there should be another goalie in there. Curtis Joseph should be there too, and he's not. I'm just wondering about that. Two former Leafs, Alexander Mogilny and him, should have been in the Hall of Fame a while back.
That's a really good one. The case for Alexander McGillney, I just don't understand why he's not in. I've checked all the stats. He's done an incredible amount in so many different areas, and I just don't get why he's not in.
Louis played with McGillney. What was he like, Lou?
He was a he was a different individual, only because he had just come over from Russia when they smuggled him over. He was really more or less a lonesome player. But I'll tell you, I saw things on the ice that I'd never seen before out of a hockey player. And then when they've got Patty LaFontaine coming over in a trade for Pierre Turgeon, they put him on a different level altogether. He was just unbelievable. One-on-one coming down the right wing and taking him wide and then going in the middle. There wasn't too many defensemen that could stop him.
Naz, anybody else who should be in the hall?
Well, Paul Henderson, that's kind of obvious, but we keep going over and over and over again, but he never gets in, so he's not in there. Jaromír Jágr should be in there too, even though he's still playing in Czechoslovakia. I think that's...
He can't. He's not retired yet.
Yeah.
He's
50 years old.
Well, you know, but I think they have to be retired for a certain period of time, unless he's retired, then he's not eligible.
What is the criteria of a Hall of Famer, I wonder, right? That's the question I wanted to ask Dave. What's the criteria for a Hall of Famer?
There's certain criteria, it's length, character factors into it, and community service, and those types of things. So, Lou, over time... Any comments on any of that?
I think it's 500 goals, isn't it?
No, you don't have to have 500 goals. Because
I don't think Clark Gillies had 500 goals, did he?
No, but he only had 4 Stanley Cup rings.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm just saying, I can't. Yeah, Clark Gillies has 4 Stanley Cup rings for sure.
All right. I really don't know what goes into it. I know. There has been. Questions on certain players getting in at certain times. I'm questioning if why isn't Dale Hunter in there? You know, there's a perfect name, but there's also a couple of guys that have scored 500 goals or more that aren't in there right now. So it's almost like the Baseball Hall of Fame. If you get your 3,000 hits, I think you're almost automatically in, aren't you?
Yeah, that's true. McGillney, getting back to McGillney, when he came over, had he not played for Buffalo for a while when you got traded over to the Sabres?
You know what? I can't remember that. I know he had a fear of flying the first year he came over, and he started taking the train to most of the away games. But again, you know, Alex was more or less a lonely guy away from the rink. Nobody really got a chance to know him. So I didn't get a chance to spend that much time. I was only there for 3 months with the Sabres. So it's talent-wise, he definitely deserves to be in there.
Did you play with Brasso too, Lou?
No.
No, you didn't play with him?
No.
Vernon? Lou?
What's that?
Did you play with Vernon?
No, I played him against Mike. I can't remember how many actual games I actually played against Tommy Brasso, because he was from Buffalo to Pittsburgh, if I'm not mistaken.
Anyways, we've finally been able to connect with Dave Stubbs, NHL columnist, fantastic NHL historian. He's in town for the Hockey Hall of Fame inductions. Dave, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me. Sorry you've been trying to reach me in Montreal. I'm sitting down the road from you in Toronto.
Oh, yeah. you must be here celebrating. You must have been up late last night celebrating the Alouettes victory, I guess.
I was not, actually. I spent 6 hours yesterday with Carey Price.
Oh, wow.
And I've got a major feature coming on Carey for NHL.com next Sunday. It was a fascinating visit. He was in for the Sport Card Expo. He literally parachute dropped. He was in and out very quickly, but we covered his entire career from minor hockey right through to where he is now. So Carey and I go back many, many, many years. So it was great to spend that amount of time with him yesterday. So I'm looking forward to doing that. But here we are, Hall of Fame weekend. It's always an exciting time.
It certainly is. It's the goalie class, Dave. Vernon Barrasso-Lundquist, which is not to forget, Geraldine Haney and Ken Hitchcock, who are also proud members of a fantastic class. Your overall assessment of this year's class, Dave?
Well, obviously, you can never go wrong with the people who are going into the Hall of Fame. Inevitably, what it becomes is people saying, how come so-and-so wasn't in? I like the fact there are three goaltenders in. Apparently, one of our colleagues at NHL.com spoke with Grant Fuhr recently and mentioned to him that there were three goaltenders going in, and Grant kind of said, well, it's about time. And you know what, if you look down the list, you figure goaltenders are such key members of a hockey club. You go through this, and I mean, I didn't go right to the dawn of time, but 1980, Harry Lumley and Gump Worsley went in together, and that is the most recent time that more than one goaltender has gone in together. And we went a decade between Grant Fuhr going in 2003 and Billy Smith going in 1993. Then we had a couple of years where we had a goalie going in every year, where we had to back it up from Tretiak in 89 to Tony Oh in 88 to Eddie Jackman in 87. But, it's nice to see that the goaltenders are getting their due, and it's a really nice class of people. I mean, these guys all got up on Friday at the ring presentation ceremony in the SO Great Hall at the Hall of Fame, and they spoke eloquently to their team and to their families and to their teammates and to just their love of the game. And I think we'll hear a lot more of that in the induction speeches on Monday night at Brookfield Place.
And, of course, being a member of the the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee obviously sometimes comes with a certain level of criticism, constructive and positive. It's always the debate always becomes, you know, these are all great members of the Hall of Fame. None of this is intended to be any criticism of the committee in terms of the people they selected this year. But, you know, fans and sports talk radio, we always love to chat about the ones that haven't made it. And we had a really quick chat prior to you coming on the air. And the one that seems to stick out the most for me and for my co-host, Naz, is Alexander McGillney. You know, I look at the Hall, I look at it as a place of excellence, and Alexander McGillney's flame shone very, very bright for a significant period of time, both here in the NHL and also in his international career. The risk he took by, I guess he was a defector in those times. Do you sense that there's any big push for him? I just don't understand why.
I don't get a push for or against anyone. I don't think there's ever a push against anyone. But yeah, McGillney won the Lady Byng in 2003, won the Cup in 2000. Here's a guy, he had played almost 1,000 games in the NHL, 473 goals, 1032 points. I mean, he's one of those guys who, yeah, you say, like, why is he sort of in the ether? Why is he just not sort of, why is there no traction being gained for a guy like that? And I mean, their time may come. It's interesting how the committee works. I mean, a name has to come forward. The nomination has to be championed by one individual on the committee. It then goes to the vote. So it's interesting. I wish that the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee were more transparent in what they do. I mean, I always kind of joke that you wait for the puff of white smoke coming out of the chimney.
That's a good way
down
of putting
at the corner
it. Yeah.
Of Front and Yonge Street to see when the actual class has been named. But hey, the Hall of Fame Committee works the way it does, and for better or for worse, that's how they do things. So I'm going to back up before McGillney. I mean, we've tossed around ideas in the past, names of guys like J.C. Tremblay and Paul Henderson. Claude Provost, I do know for a fact that Claude Provost's name was brought forward in nomination this year, and it was a very solid nomination. This is a guy who won the Stanley Cup 9 times and was the greatest defensive forward of his day. He would have won the Selke Trophy a fistful of times if the Selke had existed in those days. But, I mean, he's a guy who's got to be in. And some people will argue against the fact that, look, he played on this juggernaut, right? He played on these great teams. Yeah. But, I mean, listen, this guy, I mean, Bobby Hull wore him like a sweater. He was all over him. And, I mean, Claude Provost played within the rules and was a great, solid, honest hockey player. And I think that the time is long, long overdue. Yeah. That he should be in there. The names will always sort of keep throwing names out as to who we think should be in there. But there are lots of candidates who are still there, and there's still lots of room in the Hall of Fame for the great players, no question.
Dave, is Carey Price an automatic first ballot?
You know, the only thing against Carey Price, I suppose, would be no Stanley Cup, right? But, I mean, that's not his fault. I mean, he took the team as close as they have been since 1993, a couple of years ago, against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we spoke to that yesterday. I mean, listen, his body of work, he won Olympic gold. He won the World Cup of Hockey. He won the World Juniors. He swept those trophies historically in 2000, was it 14, 15, when he won the four of them. No goaltender had ever done that previously. And he was just a terrific goaltender. I mean, he was just a kid who comes out of Anaheim Lake, British Columbia, is drafted by the Montreal Canadiens. I don't believe, and people can argue with me all they like, but I don't think there's a tougher position to play in the National Hockey League than goaltender in Montreal, because that is 24/7 in that city. And if there were a 25th hour in an eighth day, people would still be yelling on talk radio about why the Canadians are using so-and-so on the second power play unit in August. I mean, so, you know, I think that I don't know if he's going to be in first ballot. I mean, his name certainly is going to come up for consideration. But listen, he's still under contract to the Canadians this year. He has 2 more years before he can even officially declare himself retired. Yeah. You know, so I don't know. I mean, the Canadians could conceivably, for cap reasons, move him to another team. He would be a non-playing roster guy who would help a team meet the floor. But, you know, he has said this repeatedly, and he repeated this to me yesterday. He said, always in my heart, I will be a Montreal Canadian. I mean, I spent almost half of my adult life in that city, and I will come back and forth to Montreal and continue to enjoy that city because it's been a huge part of my life. So he's going to get serious consideration for the Hockey Hall of Fame first ballot. Look, it's going to depend on who comes up first year when his retirement is officially declared. So, but Carey Price is certainly going to get, there'll be a lot of discussion in that committee room about him at some point.
We're talking to Dave Stubbs, acclaimed NHL historian. Dave, we only have a couple of minutes left. A couple of names not in the hall. Like your thoughts. It seems like the debate over Paul Henderson is sort of, that debate seems to be over. I know my heart says he should be, because I know where I was on September 28th, 1972. My head, it's a tough argument to make logically, but my heart says it should. But go ahead,
Dave.
Yeah,
you know what it is. It's a tough argument, and it's certainly a passionate argument that people will have about Paul Henderson. He had a brilliant sequence of games in the most historic series ever played, and his goal in Game 8 with Yvan Cornwell, I always joke with Yvan. I said the most famous photo of you is of your back, and the Roadrunner laughs about that. You know, Henderson had an interesting career in the NHL, 707 games, 236 goals, 241 assists. He had a very good career with rare gusts to great, but I mean, he is historically known and renowned for his role in the Summit Series. And then people will mention the names of Harlamov and Yakushev and Tretiak, and these are guys who played on the Russian team in 72 who are in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So it is called the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not the NHL Hall of Fame. There is consideration given, and that is obviously why guys like Tretiak and Yakushev and Harlamov are in there. They won massive amounts of accolade playing for the Russian national team. The people who argue against that say, yeah, but who do they play against? They played against a bunch of tomato cans in Europe at the time. So I don't know. I mean, I wake up some mornings and I say Paul Henderson should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. There's some days I think, does he have the numbers? Does he have the body of work through that entire career to be there? I don't know. So if Paul Henderson does at some point make it into the Hall of Fame, he will be certainly a deserving candidate. I would never argue that he should not be there. But again, he's one of those names that will always generate great spirited discussion among hockey fans, especially when they start knocking around the names of the Russians who played in the 1972 Summit Series and who's in there for Team Canada as well.
Dave, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'd love to keep this conversation going for another half an hour. We're going to have to get you back at some point in time.
I'd say you know where to find me, but you'll probably try to find me in Montreal again instead of Toronto. Listen, thanks for having me as always.
Thanks, Dave.
It's always a delight, guys. I love your talk about the game. So enjoy Hall of Fame weekend.
Dave Stubbs. Naz, Lou, you still with us?
I'm still here.
Get better. Naz, happy birthday again to all. Last word.
Thanks very much. Go Bills tomorrow night against the Broncos.
And to all our listeners, have a fantastic week. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.